Good morning. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. We gather as a diverse and inclusive spiritual community that seeks to inspire love, work for justice, and grow in community. No matter your gender, age, economic status, political affiliations, affectional or sexual orientation, spirituality or beliefs, you are welcome here.
First of all, I want to say thank you for an amazing, amazing day yesterday. My heart is filled overflowing with joy and gratitude, and I wanted to show you, this is the stole you gave me as a sign of our promises to walk together through the years to come. It is absolutely beautiful, made by the Socially Responsible Sweatshop, who did a gorgeous job with it. Thank you. And I'll tell you, you guys really know how to throw a party. And second, I have news about the social hall building that will go up here this year. The building expansion team put out a request for proposals in December, and we received 4 bids on January 9th. Our next task will be to vet them very carefully, make a decision about who will be our contractor, and then proceed to contract from there. So we will keep you posted, but we are making progress. We begin our worship this morning by lighting a flame within a chalice as a symbol of sanctuary and safety, to unite us in our worship as a sign of life's beauty and wonder, and to remind us of our ongoing search for the light of truth within us and among us. Our chalice lighter this morning is Kiara. Would you join me in the words Deborah Falk wrote for lighting the chalice? You'll find them in your order of service. We seek our place in the world and the answers to our heart's deep questions. As we seek, may our hearts be opened to unexpected answers. May the light of our chalice remind us that this is a community of warmth, of wisdom, and welcoming of multiple truths.
Lost all sense of feeling? Have you given up or given in? Are you living or just breathing? The answer lies within. Does life tie you in a knot? Does it seep into your skin? Can it tell you all the things that you forgot? Does it sing the song within? If life is the question you've been wanting to ask, then love is the answer. Yes, yes, yes. Am I a shadow beneath a water wave? Am I a dream inside my mother's arm? Can I ask you just one question? Who am I? Who am I? Does my life make a difference? Am I living to full capacity? If I stopped asking all these questions, who would I be? Who would I be? If life is the question you've been wanting to ask, then love is the answer. Yes, yes, yes. We are living questions, stepping out from the past. Our lives will be the answers and our voices in the future. Will last. Have you lost all sense of feeling? Have you given up or given in? Are you living or just breathing? The answer lies within. The answer lies within. The answer lies within.
What is your vocation? The dictionary defines vocation as the particular suitability for a career or trade. By trade, I am a professor at Kent State. My vocation is, and always has been, teaching, especially language and language arts. My brother is almost a decade younger than me, so he was the perfect pupil to practice on. I subjected him to countless hours of playing school with our prized possession, a very large chalkboard. Fast forward about 30 years, and here I am, teaching Spanish and grammar for my living. When it comes to church life, vocation is most often referred to as calling. While vocation is the practical use of talents, calling can be seen as the spiritual, divine nature of how we contribute to and participate in religious life. Because a primary characteristic of teaching is being a leader, filling leadership roles in the life and work of the church came naturally to me. Saying yes to leadership has taught me more about the church than I ever could have learned otherwise. But more than that, it taught me about myself, what my strengths and weaknesses are, and where my passions lie. There is a wonderful quote from the author Eric Wickstrom in his book Serving with Grace, which can be found in the church library. This is what he says. Imagine if the practical and administrative work of the church, meetings, planning, teaching, etc., was understood not as a necessary evil, but as an integral part of the mission of the church to spiritually nurture us. What if lay leadership was not the means to an end, but an end in itself? Could you experience the meeting room as a zendo and the deliberations of a task force as a form of group prayer? Imagine church not as a place led by a few overly taxed people, but one where leadership is a broadly shared ministry that members of the community undertake for the deep joy of it. The question to you is this: will you accept the challenge and the invitation? Will you take advantage of the opportunity to use your service in the church to deepen your spiritual life and further your spiritual journey? The monasteries and intentional spiritual communities of all religious traditions understand that each and every moment of each and every day provides opportunities to learn, deepen, and grow. Whether sitting in a meditation or prayer in your room or chopping carrots and washing dishes in the kitchen, anything can be used as a tool for deepening our connection with life. The quiet of the prayer bench and the bustle of the business office are not seen as two distinct things. They are two aspects of the same process. The busy work of the monastery provides as much of a pathway as the time of prayer. And when the work is seen that way, that is just what it does. So my question to you this morning is this: how are you called to serve? Come, let us worship together.
I'd like to invite the children up to the chancel to stand with Reverend Stephen, if you would like to. We're going to save the flight of the bumblebee for another service. And instead today, we're going to share with you the children's charge for Reverend Stephen. Reverend Stephen asked me to talk with the children about what they expect of him as a minister. It was my pleasure to do that work, listening to the children and the youth of this beloved community talk about what is important to them was soul-warming. It inspired me, and there was also a lot of giggling. When I explained to them that they get to tell you what to do, Stephen, they were ready to start talking. In one particular conversation, a few of our second graders agreed that you should make sure that you come to church on Sunday morning, otherwise it would be closed. And I might have taken that opportunity to then talk to them about shared ministry and how a church is its people. But they were pretty clear that it's important you show up on Sunday morning. So in the spirit of showing up for our children, the children and youth of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent charge you, Stephen Protzman, to always be accessible to them and create opportunities for them to talk to you. Let them ask you questions and be thoughtful with your answers. Take the time to get to know them and be interested in their lives. Specifically, they want you to know that they are awesome. And as you get to know them, you will find that they have many talents and interests that they want to share with you. They ask that you help teach them new things and guide them. And they insist that you come to Hogwarts. They expect you to be kind and gentle. And if they are sad, please help them to feel better. Respect the earth, they say, and do not throw trash on the ground. Be kind to animals. Our youth expect an invitation to the table, and they ask that you believe that their opinions about the life and the work of this church are just as important as those of the grown-ups. And the children invite you to hang out with them at the art table during coffee hour sometimes. And when you come, I'm told that you can totally bring snacks if you want to. They want you to keep learning new things and share what you've learned with them and how it's changed you. They want you to know that you're going to make a lot of mistakes. So when that happens, it's okay to be sad because everybody makes mistakes. But then they think that you should get back up again. They want worship that is interesting to them, and specifically, they'd like you to tell more funny stories. They want you to join them for gatherings outside of Sunday mornings, like potlucks and celebrations and game nights. They expect you to encourage them to get involved in making the world a better place and ask that you walk with them and do the work with them. They ask that you be a role model and show them what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist. They say, laugh with us, love us, help us, be respectful, and be nice. And finally, Miss Michelle in the nursery teaches three simple rules as a covenant with the youngest of our congregation every Sunday morning. And so, Stephen, our nursery and preschool children charge you with these rules and ask you to covenant with them. No hurts, stick together, and have fun. May it be so. Stephen, will you honor the charge from the children?
I will do so joyfully.
Excellent.
Great job, guys.
I invite you to enter into the spirit of prayer and reflection. Spirit of life and of love, God of our hearts and understanding, you in which we share and find strength and common purpose. We turn our minds and hearts toward one another, as we hold in this circle of care and concern all who need our love and support, those we've named in this time of remembering, those who are in our hearts and thoughts, all who are ill, who are in pain, either in body or in spirit, those who struggle with addiction, those who are lonely, those who are grieving, the victims of any kind of abuse, we pray for them. We pray for ourselves, too, that we would be grateful for the many blessings we receive each and every day, that we would use those blessings with joy, generosity, and kindness. Help us to live fully this life we've been given, to treat each and every moment as a rare and precious treasure, to worship what is of true worth, to practice radical hospitality as we welcome the stranger, to speak the truth as we know it, and to join in the struggle for justice and peace in our world. Today, as we reflect on who we truly are and how we are each called in our own way to serve others, help us to be open to life's call, to use the gifts we have each been given, and to offer our hearts and hands in joyful service to this community and to a world that so desperately needs the love and hope we can provide through serving others. Help us to feel the heartbeat of life itself and to find wonder and awe in both the struggle and the beauty of life. To remember that we are connected in mystery and miracle to one another and all of creation. To care for this fragile planet and work for the well-being of every creature. To affirm life and to walk upon this earth in gentleness and reverence. May it be so, and amen.
Our first reading this morning is an excerpt from Saying Yes by the Reverend Sandra Fees. Learning when and how and to what and to whom to say yes is an ongoing process. Learning to be intentional in our decision-making is to recognize that what we do with our lives matters. Rather than simply allowing ourselves to be bounced around by life and events, we can see ourselves as walking a sacred path. In addition to being a person who is often asked to do more, I am also a person often asking others to take on responsibilities. Unlike many people I know, I actually like to recruit volunteers. I like it because asking people to volunteer is a way of offering them a possibility that just may enhance their lives, that may be a good spiritual fit. It is also a genuine chance for an individual to serve and also to grow and develop. I encourage people to say yes when they can and no when they must. I expect the person I'm asking to spend time in discernment, discovering what this possibility may open up in their life. When we say yes or no without taking the time for deep listening, reflection, and discernment, we fail to heed our own deepest needs and longings. We can miss out on the very opportunities for which we are best suited. We're not talking about things like whether you want cream and sugar in your coffee. We're talking about what will make your spirit come to life. This process of spiritual discernment has to do with getting in touch with what matters most to us. This is the point. It's a process of setting life priorities, spiritual priorities. This is not the same as creating a big to-do list or making New Year's resolutions. It isn't even really about setting goals. It has to do with listening to life, to what is stirring beneath the surface of things, to the voice of God, to uncovering what inspires and motivates us. It asks, what breathes life into your day-to-day living? What creates meaning and purpose? What makes you happy? To be able to answer yes with the conviction to our deepest needs is to meet each day with hope. Howard Thurman, the great African-American theologian, said, "Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go and do that, because that's what the world needs, people who have come alive." Our second reading is Callings by the Reverend Nancy Schaefer. When you heard that voice and knew it finally called for you and what it was saying, where were you? Were you in the shower, wet and soapy, or chopping cabbage late for dinner? Were you planting radish seeds or seeking one last sock? Maybe wiping handprints off a window or coaxing words into a sentence, or coming upon a hyacinth, or one last no. Where were you when you heard that ancient voice? And did yes get born right then, and did you weep? Had it called you since before you even were? And when you knew that, did your joy escape all holding? Where were you when you heard that calling voice? And how, in that moment, did you mark it? How ever after are you changed? Tell us, please, all you can about that voice. Teach us how to listen, how to hear. Teach us all you can of saying yes.
During my grade school years, I lived in Rolla, Missouri, a small town about 2 hours southwest of St. Louis. I was raised a Roman Catholic, and I attended St. Patrick's School. Part of our yearly ritual was a visit by a charismatic priest who would talk to us about vocation. He always began by asking a question, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" One boy would say a fireman. Another would say an astronaut, which in the 1960s was a very popular answer. Another boy might say a doctor. At least one girl would say a nun, and one boy would say a priest, much to the delight of the nuns who taught our classes. And every year I asked the question, "But how do you know?" The only answer I ever got was, "You just know." But I didn't know. Can you imagine how they'd react if I did know? And I stood up and said, "I want to be a Unitarian Universalist minister when I grow up. I want to be a leader in a liberal faith that rejects the notion of traditional religious authority and encourages each individual to search for truth and meaning in their lives." I imagine with all the questions I asked that the nuns were already wishing I'd just go be a UU and leave them in peace. I didn't know as a child that Unitarian Universalism even existed. It would be many more years before I discovered this liberal faith and finally said yes to my call to the ministry. Vocation comes from the Latin word vocare, to call, and refers to the deepest purposes of our lives. Although Madison Avenue tries to convince you otherwise, we are more than a smartphone, the latest fashions, and a Martha Stewart kitchen. There's more to life than our jobs, raising our children, our marriage or relationship, the routines and basic human needs of every day. Nor are we defined by our struggles, our mistakes, our addictions, or our failures in life. We are each a child of the universe, blessed with a capacity for wonder, filled with possibility, a unique combination of gifts and dreams and talents. One of our important spiritual tasks is to discover our gifts and answer life's invitation to use them. In many spiritual traditions, the idea of a call has been understood as an external voice, perhaps the voice of God. Parker Palmer, who's a writer and teacher, says that this external voice, which often says that we are not enough and that we need to become someone different, someone better, is a distortion of vocation rather than an invitation to discover the treasure within ourselves. Palmer writes, "Vocation does not come from a voice out there calling me to become something I am not. It comes from a voice in here, calling me to be the person I was born to be, to fulfill the original selfhood given me at birth. As Hal sang to us earlier, the answer lies within." As Unitarian Universalists, our first and most trusted source of spiritual wisdom affirms that voice within. It speaks of the direct experience of transcending mystery and wonder, a universal human experience, which is life-giving and has the power to renew our spirits. In order to hear the voice within, we each need to have a devotional life, a spiritual practice or practices that helps us turn inward and ask, as Sandra Fees has said, "What breathes life into our day-to-day living? What creates meaning and purpose?" If we take time to listen on a regular basis, we can begin to understand who we are and why we're passionate about certain things, what our gifts and talents are, why we feel drawn to certain kinds of work, how we are called to say yes to that voice within us when we hear it. If we're lucky, our jobs, whether it's as a nurse or a firefighter, a parent or a teacher, is also a vocation because we are able to use our gifts and talents more fully. Discovering our calling, our vocation, is also not a once-in-a-lifetime experience. It's something that can happen numerous times at any point in our lives. My colleague Naomi King writes, Knowing where we are called and to what meaningful work and to which relationships are amazing life-affirming gifts. It would be an amazing experience and a great gift if these calls happened only once in our lives. But even more generously, even more amazingly, they don't just happen once, but repeatedly. It's happened to me more than once. As I reflect on the choices I've made in my life and who I've become, I realize that the most rewarding and life-changing experiences were those where I heard the voice inside me and I let curiosity and my adventurous spirit lead me to unknown places. I chose architecture for my college degree, responding to an inner childhood fascination with how buildings are built. I studied the pipe organ and became a designer. That same curiosity called me to find out what the instrument was about and how it worked. And then, of course, there's my call to the ministry. That voice was actually an external one that asked the right question at the right time. But it was my inner voice that said yes, and I mean yes, to something that had always been there inside me and just needed to be drawn out. One of those times I truly knew. I said yes, and I have been totally changed. In the second reading, Reverend Nancy Schaefer said, "Where were you when you heard that calling voice? And how in that moment did you mark it? However, after, are you changed? Tell us, please, all you can about that voice. Tell us how to listen, how to hear. Teach us all you can of saying yes. When was the last time you said yes in a meaningful way that changed your life? When you knew something was calling you and you were able to respond with your entire self, not with a yeah or a mm-hmm or a hmm or a cautious I'll think about it, but with a blunt, monosyllabic, and out loud yes. As you think about the last time you said yes in a meaningful way, how did it change your life? Did that yes take you down what you recognize as a sacred path? My colleague Josh Pollack speaks of this path as work that allows us in some way to serve and celebrate life. The work that presents itself to us as our vocation, he says, as we learn to engage in it, is work that allows us in some way to bring joy, healing, justice, and love in our world. The work of vocation allows us in some way to move from isolation to connection, from fragmentation to wholeness, from a potentially selfish individualism to a generous and caring engagement with a wider community of people and other living things. He concludes by saying, it's work that helps us in some way address the brokenness in society, the injustices in society, the evil in our world. This work is serving others and loving the world. If we're doing church well, every single one of you is on your sacred path and has a calling. Unfortunately, the institutional church often fails at this work because it's too focused on maintaining itself. I saw this cartoon titled A New Member's Worst Nightmare. There's an older man speaking to a young couple who are new to the church. The couple sees this huge bulletin board listing all the congregation's committees. At the top in bold letters, it says, "Our committees need you." The old man says, "Most people are on 9 or 10 committees. But since you're new, people will understand if you only join 6 or 7 to start." The best part of the cartoon is the name of the committees themselves: Thermostat Control Committee, Committee for More Comfortable Seats, Committee for the Promotion of Committees, my personal favorite, the Sermon Critique Committee, the Dear Control Committee. The reality of being a congregation and practicing shared ministry means that we are all asked to give generously of our time, our energy, and our money in order to sustain this institution, and you do. Thank you. But our end goal here is not to be a destination. People don't come to church to be on committees, unless you're planning to be a minister or your calling is truly institutional in nature. You come here for community. But I hope you also come here to discover who you truly are, to listen to the voice within calling you and offering you the opportunity to find out, as Frederick Buechner says, where your deep passions meet the world's deep needs. I have this hope for this church as a place that at its best helps every one of us to be spiritual beings, as Reverend Victoria Safford says, and all that implies of it: creativity, imagination, passionate compassion, crazy wisdom, ancient wisdom, selfless courage, and radical reverence for life and love for one another, absolutely, and that love that rises out of us for something larger than ourselves, call it what you will. A love that asks us to say yes to the call of our hearts to use our gifts, our talents, our wisdom, and our compassion in service to a world that desperately needs what every single one of us has to offer. If we truly want to be Unitarian Universalists, it's who we must be. Our seven principles are not nice, sweet, harmless suggestions, but a powerful call to service. If I believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, how can I just stand idly by if even one person is hungry or homeless or alone? Can we affirm justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships and not join in the struggle for living wages, racial justice, and immigration reform? Do we dare say that we practice the democratic process if we do not vote or speak our conscience, both in the life and work of this congregation and in our greater society? If you proclaim the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice, are you willing to show up to march and to protest, to sing and to pray, to hold our leaders accountable when they worship the false gods of violence, walls, and war as a solution for conflict? Does the interconnected web of all existence have any meaning if you and I do not recycle, reject rampant consumerism, speak truth about climate change, and care for the earth? These are questions that ask us to respond with a spirit of yes. A yes that promises to breathe abundant life into every one of us and into our world, bringing us joy, fulfillment, and bringing our world closer to the beloved community. Where do your heart's passions meet the deep needs of the world? Do you know? If not, are you ready to find out? May we say yes to life in ways that will truly transform our world and bear witness through our lives to the power and possibilities of that love greater than ourselves that calls us forward in faith and in hope. May it be so, and it is together we can make it so. I invite us to a few moments of reflection. Kristen Collins says, "We give to remind ourselves how many gifts we have to offer. We give to remember that we are part of something larger than ourselves. We give because we believe in music, love, and sacred space. We give with the faith that together we have enough. This congregation, the UU Church of Kent, thrives because each of you believe in music, in love, and sacred space, and you so generously give of your time, your talents and gifts, and your financial resources. Thank you. Knowing that together we do have enough, we now give and receive the offering as a sign of our shared commitment to the life and work of this community and beyond. Will the ushers please come forward and receive the offering?" These are the words of Rebecca Parker. In the midst of a world marked by tragedy and beauty, there must be those who bear witness against unnecessary destruction and who with faith rise and lead in freedom with grace and power. There must be those who are restless for respectful and loving companionship among human beings, whose presence invites people to be themselves without fear. There must be those who gather with the congregation of remembrance and compassion, draw water from old wells, and walk the simple path of love for neighbor. And there must be communities of people who seek to do justice and love kindness, who call on the strength of soul force to heal, transform, and bless life. Now blessed by this time together, renewed in our commitment to be a community of people who seek to do justice, love kindness, and transform and heal and bless our world, let us go forth in joy and in hope to continue inspiring love, seeking justice, and growing a community. May it be so. Blessed be, and amen.